television nerds. My name is Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, Joanne Boland. Joanne's role as Morgan Finn in CBC's Strange Empire comes after an impressive list of television appearances in Copper, Saving Hope, Lost Girl, Flashpoint, Haven, The Listener, Being Erica, and Blue Murder. Some remember her as Gail Summers in Zone of Separation, Margaret from Slings and Arrows, or Dana Davin on Train 48. Boland's other acting credits include Khaled, Sex, Lies, and Obsession, Charms for the Easy Life, Ubu the Barbarian, Angels in the Infield, Two of Us, Year of the Phoenix, Harlan County, Thin Blue Line, and Rated X. But I'll always remember that I got to talk about Parliament Funkadelic and Tom Waits in my conversation with Joanne Boland. So I would have to imagine that the last 9 months to a year has been a bit of a roller coaster ride with regards to Strange Empire. It was funny, we just talked with Aaron Poole a couple episodes ago, and he was telling us, even though he knew that his character wasn't meant for a season two, that he even found it a roller coaster ride going into some of the decisions that was made. Maybe give us a bit of your perspective on how the past couple of months have rolled out with regards to not only the fact that the renewal, you know, was problematic, but beyond the fact that there was such a core group of fans that came up screaming afterwards.
Yeah, I think it was the really tricky one because, you know, in this business, you kind of always just roll with the punches. You never know where something is going to go next. But Strange Empire was a really special project. When we were shooting it, there was just a real sense of family and a sense of creating something quite different. And I can speak only as an actor, but it was such an amazing environment to work in. It felt like we were really all working together and creating and venturing into places that, you know, I had definitely not gone in before. So when we wrapped, there was a real sense that we would be going again, and that was the hope. And then when the decision came down, it was really sad, especially because I live in Toronto and we shot the show out in Vancouver in Aldergrove, BC. So for me, you know, because normally when you're shooting and then you wrap a show, you tend to see the crew again on something else that you're working on. So Strange Empire, it's, you know, this is the first time I'd worked with this crew. So the odds of seeing them again, especially in the next little bit, are pretty slim. So it was sad in that respect to not be able to say a proper goodbye. And it really didn't feel as well, even plot-wise, that it was done. There was just, I kind of had a little tidbits of where we were potentially going in the second season. And it was just so exciting. And just everyone was so excited to sink their teeth into that. So it was really such a shame. And the way that I had found out, it's funny because people tend to think as actors that we really know what's going on. We don't. You know, we're kind of sometimes the last to know. And I think I was coming home from Great Wolf Lodge because I have two kids. And Great Wolf Lodge. See, that's my life. Exciting.
Great Wolf Lodge is perhaps my personal ring of hell, but that's a different
issue. Yeah, oh, I hear you. I get it. Oh, my good God.
It's just moist children shrieking all over the place.
I know. It is so loud. But yeah, so we were traveling home from there, and it was something on Twitter. I think it was John Doyle had tweeted, and he has been such a champion of the show and really supported us. And there was something he tweeted in regards to CBC, the decisions for the next season would be extremely disappointing. And as soon as I saw that, I just had that feeling. I went, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. And then still hadn't heard anything. And then John tweeted something else because Kara was doing the upfronts for, because it was that weekend, was the Screen Awards. And just something, it was very obvious at that point that it was Strange Empire that he was talking about. And so, you know, and then we did find out from Laurie, and it was rather heartbreaking because you fall in love with your character. You know, sure. The characters that they had written were really special. You know, really special. And, you know, normally in a show you can say there's a couple characters, oh, what a great storyline. But, you know, there were so many, many great characters on that show. It's such a shame.
I wonder, too, because it was such a unique, there was a unique premise to that show.
And, yes.
But that could also be that's also the danger of writing a show with such a unique premise, right? Is that you're closing yourself off from a bit of the audience, and you're hoping that it can transcend that. But sometimes it's the fickle hand of audiences. You never know what you're going up against. I mean, it could be just because you're on the wrong night at the wrong time against the wrong who knows what. And I'm just thankful that even though we might not necessarily hear about something else for Strange Empire, that there are more opportunities now for shows like Strange Empire than there probably ever been.
Yeah, that's when I'm hoping that it just opens the door. Because I remember, even when we had wrapped first season, I said, Laurie, you're making it very difficult for me because you've set the bar so high, right. For roles like this, and specifically, roles for women. I've been at this quite a while now. And, mm-hmm. It really was, Morgan was such a special character, to get the opportunity to play, and they were really just, the scripts themselves, I remember reading them. Some of them, I just couldn't sleep after because, because normally you try to get your sleep in the night before because you're about to shoot and you want your brain to kind of be on. And I remember getting these sometimes late at night, and then I would just almost curse because I was like, oh, because I'd have to read them. I couldn't go to sleep till I had read it. And then I would be up for hours and just being like, oh, because they're just so dark.
Right. Is it a scenario though, like even as you indicated, it's, if you're going back, and I assume that, one of the things that anybody who's in the business in Canada is always looking at, unless you're locked into a show, you're looking at two or three different scripts at the same time, and you're thinking to yourself, geez, I wish, like, the tone has been set for you, and you're thinking, okay, this is okay, but I sure wish it was had this much of a tone to it, or I got to say this, or I got to use this kind of language, or I used to.
Yeah, it was just this show in particular. There was just such a, because sometimes on certain things you sort of get scripts and you kind of go, oh, I wish it was a little bit different this way or that. But it was just such an honor, being able to work with these scripts because the writing was just phenomenal.
So when you're walking in on other shows, and I'm going back on the Bible of IMDb at this point, and hoping that it's accurate as I go along with it, I never know from one time
to
the next.
Yes, no, exactly.
But like over the past 5 years or so, there have been a lot of opportunities where you've jumped into an episode of a show here or a show here or a show here, which I'm finding as I'm talking to more and more people is pretty much the nature of being an actor in Canada. Is it that? That concept has to be tough as well, like going from a steady shoot of a show which took a chunk of your life to a scenario whereby, you hope you can line something else up again, but like a lot of other actors that I've talked to, it's like, if someone sends me this script, I'm going to probably have to go do this script. Is there anything that, or is that, are you going to feel that that's just, okay, I'm going back to this and I've done this before and it's not a problem? Or is it now you're sitting back and thinking, geez, let's get another series lined up as soon as possible.
I have to say, I really did enjoy again working, on a series because it does create that family dynamic.
Sure.
And also it as well, there is a certain level of trust that you begin to have with the other actors that you're working with. You know how they're working. Mm-hmm. They almost as well can indicate, okay, is the scene working? And you get to play. Where what can be tricky and also exciting though is guest starring. Yeah, I've done a lot of guest starring on different shows, and you do have to kind of come in with that confidence, kind of going, okay, because you are walking into, as you said, like someone else's set that they've been living in that for, 6 months or 8 months. So it can be a bit tricky. But that said, you tend to work, especially in Toronto, it's a lot of the crews that you've known from different shows. So there is that certain level of trust there. But it is nice being on a series because then there's not that same stress kind of going to what's coming up next. And especially, I have two kids, so that's always in the back of your head. You want to obviously make a living doing what I, sure. doing what I love to do. So.
Can I back up to that for a sec? I know this kind of sounds like a bit generic, but what are some of the unique challenges you're facing, not only being an actor in Canada, but being an actor who's a mom and who's trying to struggle with just Toronto as a thing? I mean, I'm from Hamilton.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Oh, nice.
And I love Hamilton, and I never want to leave Hamilton.
Yeah.
And Toronto, I love visiting, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Oh, interesting.
just because of the I'm not used to the, I'm don't, could I maybe, but the pace of it is just, I don't know that I want to deal with that pace all the time.
Yeah. Well, see, for me, the pace of Toronto, I find really calming. My husband is an actor. He's been at like Stratford and Shaw. So we've been to the smaller towns and it scares me. I don't know. I can't sleep. It's too quiet. Because we live right downtown. We live in Liberty Village in Toronto. Okay. And for me, I think, we've also lived in London, England, which is quite busy there. Those kind of cities, big cities, is where I feel the most calm and at home. But it is. It's interesting being a mother. And as I said, my husband is an actor as well. So two actors with two kids is always interesting. We both have been really blessed in our careers. You know, we've both been working. We've been together a long time. But there is certain stresses. If we're both shooting something at the same time or if he's got to play, you know, it's just trying to make sure that the kids are... you know, looked after and their needs are priority to us. It was interesting with Strange Empire because it was such a quick turnaround from when I auditioned they were having a tricky time, I think, finding Morgan, trying to find an actress who could do the role. And so I came in kind of quite late into the process, I guess. And so I think I got my offer on the Friday and I was supposed to relocate to Vancouver on the Tuesday.
Wow.
So they were fantastic about accommodating, being able to fly me back and forth for the first little bit. It can be really, really tricky. But as I said, you know, the way that things have rolled so far, it's worked out quite well. I mean, there was another mini series that I did, funny enough, with Aaron Poole, called Zone of Separation, that we shot the beginning of. We went to Bosnia to shoot it. And my son, it was my eldest, who's turning 9 now, but he was 1 at the time. So I had to fly to Bosnia and leave him. And I remember the limo coming to pick me up and, you know, they were standing there waving goodbye and the window was going up. And then all of a sudden I start bawling and my limo driver turns back to me and says, ma'am, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine. You know, it's all these different things because, you know, there's the guilt that you feel sort of being away from them. But on the flip side, I feel like I'm a better mother when I'm balanced and when that creative well is being replenished.
For sure.
You know, and my kids pick up on that as well, so it's great.
But yeah, it's I can only imagine, especially like I say, it's tough. It's tough enough doing any job these days and having a family. But
yes,
but when you're having to relocate and jump around, that has to be especially challenging.
Yeah, it is in the sense, though, it also, because our schedules are the way, it actually frees me up to be able to do, you know, I get a lot of time with my kids. Like, when I'm working, those are really intense times that I don't get to see them as much. But on the flip side, you know, it has allotted me a lot of time with my boys, so.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit, as I'm going to the IMDb here, because, like I say, tell me about Swept Under.
Oh, yeah. So this is a film that I just finished shooting in Montreal. And it was Michel Poulet was the director of it, who was just a fantastic man. It was such a Incendio Productions they make all these interesting films. And their mandate, I think, is to have a female lead in these movies. And I think they most of the time air on Lifetime, if I'm correct.
Okay.
And I got to play a police captain. So for me, that was such a great role to play because I'm suddenly, in the last couple of months, started, you know, playing detectives and this captain or this police captain. And These are roles that I've always wanted to do, funny enough. So it was a great experience in Montreal. I was shooting another movie at the time there that I can't talk about yet.
That's okay.
Which is, it's suddenly this business, everything is confidential.
Yes.
Which is really, I can't, you know, your hands are tied. But yeah, so it was a really great experience to do. And Aaron Ashmore was one of the leads in it. And we've worked together years and years ago, you know, more so back at the beginning of our careers. And I know, it was just such a blast working out in Montreal. I've been very fortunate in the last year to kind of be working at different cities in this country. And, you know, Canada's got an amazing film and TV industry. We're fortunate. We just have to keep building it.
I think if you stick around long enough in Canadian television, you'll eventually be playing a police officer at some point.
Yes.
I think that's kind of the way it works. Is if there's always going to be a police procedural shooting somewhere in Canada.
Yes. Well, it's been funny in my career because I've been really fortunate. I get to do such varied roles. It's not really sort of been necessarily one genre or one type of role that I've got to play. But the thing that always tends to happen to me is I end up being in these movies or TV shows that I'm kind of the only gal. Right. So I'm always, you know, amongst all these guys, and I'm shooting guns and doing all these things that for guys, these are their dream roles, which always, because I do not like guns, but I've spent so much time having to learn how to shoot them, you know, you know, even with Strange Empire, I never thought I'd be doing like a Western, right? Because you didn't really necessarily see, you know, women in, unless they were the sort of the whores as such. Mm-hmm. There's not that many roles for women. So, you know, I've got to kind of do a lot of things that I didn't necessarily set out to do, but it's been really fun.
I want to reach way, way back here.
Ooh.
So I'm going to prep you for it.
Okay.
Train 48.
Oh, Train 48. That was one of the best jobs I have ever had. It was one of those where, you know, it was 2.5 years of my life, and it, you know, they called it experimental TV because it was definitely something that had never been done and in Canada before, the way it worked, because it was an improvised daily drama.
Yeah.
Set on a GO train. And I always laugh if I ever go on the GO train now because I'm suddenly feel like it's all these crazy flashbacks and expecting people to start, you know, having these conversations like we did on the train. it was just such a great creative environment to work in. And it was interesting, you know, when we first started prepping that show that summer, because we had a couple of weeks beforehand working with the cast and the directors and figuring out just how we were going to do this, because we would start shooting, I think it was around 6 o'clock in the morning. And the way it worked was we would have writers that would figure out essentially what your character's arc would be, who you would be sitting with that day, and basically kind of an outline of what the conversation would be about.
Right.
So we would go in each morning, and it was funny because I think we were shooting right next to the Global News people. And so I'm sure they did not enjoy us because we were so loud and just so happy. And, you know, they're delivering these news stories. And then there we are is just, you know, laughing and making jokes about everything and running around. But that said, we would go and we would have a meeting with the writers in the morning and with the producers of the show and the director and kind of figure out, okay, where your character was at that day. And yeah, you know, and I remember that show, there was so much, the advertising campaign for that show was the biggest, I think, in any show that I've actually done up until now, which was really smart because it paid off for them. We were on the cover of every, you know, the TV Guide, et cetera. I remember there being one whole GO train with our faces on the side and just so much press for that show. I think
it was a show that was actually ahead of its time.
I agree.
Because it's a show that I think was far more made for some of the avenues and channels that we have today with regards to online streaming.
Yes.
It's something that people could have kept up on. It was really hard to follow. I mean, 318 episodes. It was not easy to always keep up with that show because in as much as it was listed almost like a soap opera.
Yes.
People oftentimes don't think of their evening entertainment as a soap opera.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, yeah, they come back, they'll come back to it once a week, but they're not used to coming to it 5 days a week.
I know. It was such an interesting, the thing that alarmed me though, because quite often what was interesting was we would get news stories just as they were breaking because they would kind of, go on the internet to see, you know, sort of, all the alternative news sites. So these pieces of, so suddenly we would be talking about the news that hadn't necessarily aired on the actual news yet. So we became people's news feed. Right. And I felt this great responsibility. And it was just really hard. Sometimes I'd be like, you know, because especially with improv, you always just want to feel free to kind of go. But then suddenly I would start thinking about, oh my goodness, I have to be careful what I say, you know. So it kind of at times felt like great responsibility, especially with my character, Dana Davin, who sort of, you know, was up on the news and up on different issues, whereas I always laugh with Paul Bronstein, who played the character of Johnny, who was one of my favorite characters. He could say anything and get away with it. And I said, you know what, Paul, you are so lucky, because I'd have to go home with homework and research things, right. And he would just kind of go home and, I don't know, drink a beer. I adore him, though. Yeah, it was great, though.
Did you come from a background that included as much improv work as that? Or
no.
I guess I'm reaching back to kind of finding where the acting bug hit you and where some of the interest in training was and all of that. And that's a very unique experience. And obviously, there are some places that a lot of actors go through a lot of improv training, but... Your first indication seems to me that that's not where you were from.
No, not at all. And we were blessed to have, you know, such amazing improvisers such as like Lisa Merchant and Jack Mosshammer, and just these people that had just such a huge wealth of knowledge when it came to improv. That's what was kind of unique with the show and the way it was cast as well, was there was, you know, different members of the cast that really were basically coming from different backgrounds. You know, my background had been, you know, film and TV, and that's, you know, where I had lived. But then you had other people that came from, you know, the theater background or improv background. And I think that's what made sort of a really interesting mix. But for me, yeah, I didn't grow up in a family that was in the arts at all. You know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My father was an accountant. And my sister, you know, became a nurse. And my other sister worked in childcare. And so for me, it was just, I don't know, I always grew up and I loved singing, and I loved the idea of acting. I think my first play at school was A Sound of Music, and I was a nun. I had a feather duster, and it was I got to be a lonely goat herder, and, you know, that was kind of where it began. And I was suddenly like, wow, this is such an amazing thing to do, to create. I loved it. It was just, it always felt so natural to me. There was never any, you know, in my head, any other field that I ever wanted to be a part of. I'd always wanted, and music was a massive part of my life. I had a music teacher, my grade 5 teacher had a piano in the classroom, mm-hmm. and I just gravitated towards that. And he saw something in me, in the skill, that I just, it was just a natural thing for me playing piano. And he went to my parents and basically said, she needs to be in lessons. Cause I had 2 older sisters who would quit anything that my parents had put them in musically. And so my parents with me, they were like, nope, we're not doing it. We're not doing the music lessons. And thankfully I had Mr. DiArmando. He went to my parents and said, she needs to be in it. And from there, that's where it began. And I started writing music when I was, I guess, 13. And I lost my father to cancer when I was 14, and his last gift to me was my piano. Okay. And so that was something that saved me, because, you know, I was in grade 9 when my father passed away, and I was in the school choir and the school band. And it was truly, I hadn't really told anyone that my father was ill. And it was members of the band and the choir, because we were traveling to San Antonio. I was one of the youngest members of the band and the choir. And they took me under their wing. And really, that was a place for me to kind of be able to deal with something. You know, when you're 14, you don't really have the... you know, the ability to deal with losing your father and what that really means. But, you know, through that, you know, I'm so thankful. And then from there, I think my first play in high school in grade 9 was Our Town, you know. Right. And I just suddenly felt like this is where I'm meant to be. Yeah, so that's my...
Why do I feel like everybody in high school at some point ran into Our Town? It's...
I know. I think it's just because it has this massive cast or something. And I know. It's a play, mind you.
It's a great... I'm just wondering if at some point it went into public domain for a year and everybody got copies of the score. And but speaking as one piano player to another, appreciate the story. I've been playing piano since I was 5, so... I completely agree with, you know, the creative... the ability of musical creativity for a kid growing up is just amazing. Oh. You know, and I was writing when I was young as well, but the ability to just sit down and play, and I don't do enough of it to this day. That's the problem.
I agree. I feel the same. I would love to be playing. I do have a band that I play with in Toronto, so that's been good in terms of my musical outlet. But definitely, we live in sort of a smallish apartment in Toronto that we bought before we had our second child. So the idea of making room for a piano anytime soon is not that realistic.
Okay, hang on. I have to talk about band.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I played in dive bars across Southern Ontario for like my entire formative years because I played in too many classic rock cover bands.
Oh, yes.
So tell me about the band.
Okay, so the band is called the Elasto Citizens.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic band. We've played all over the place. It's interesting. We were in a film. The Elasto Citizens were actually a character in a film called Picture Day that was actually debuted at TIFF. It stars Tatiana Maslany, okay. Directed by the fabulous Kate Melville. It was like coming of age a film. And Kate and Steve McCarthy, who is really great actor. He and Kate had been friends for a long time. And, you know, she wanted Steve as the lead in her film. And they were just talking one day. And I think it was either Steve was on the way to his gig and sort of said to Kate, oh, you should come. And I think as soon as she saw, she went, this is the band for my film. And so we all, what was sort of lucky for Kate was half the band is actors, so to do this film was really such a treat, and it's such a fun band to be a part of, real theatrical experience, and the band, half the members were from the Sioux, which nice. Is really funny. So yeah, so I think one time we went to the Sioux St. Marie Festival and headlined there, which was totally crazy and super fun, and I'm Mojo Mama, because we all have our funk names.
Yes.
And the girls part of it is the Ladies Foundation for the Motion of Hips, and it's just really the most ridiculous, fun, fantastic musicians. We're playing end of September at the Horseshoe, which we basically call our second home, because with a band that large, because we're sometimes 10 to 13 piece band, it's really tricky to find places that know, you know, in terms of sound, how to work with us. And also, you know, we're kind of notorious for the end of our shows is we end up having basically the whole crowd on the stage with us.
Right.
Because it's just one of those, everyone kind of gets a part of it and are dancing, and it's just super silly fun and amazing. It's really a joyous experience. So that for me has been another fantastic creative outlet. And it's funny when it sort of, the crossroads with Picture Day, and then that was very, very bizarre. It was really cool though, because we do a Tom Waits cover of Dirt in the Ground in Picture Day,
yeah,
in the movie, and we got his approval to use it. So that was, you know, when that happened, I was like, I'm done. That's fine.
I'm in love with Tom Waits. I swear. I've spent the past 2 days watching his final performance on The Letterman Show, because he just recorded it the other day. I've been in love with Tom Waits for years.
Amazing, yeah. You know, just so that was a moment definitely in my life.
The fact that you just brought up Tom Waits, and then you also brought up the fact that the band plays funk as well.
Yes.
So, okay, you're pulling at my musical heartstrings here.
See, that makes me very happy.
Yes. It's like I just imagine a party on stage like Parliament or something like that.
That's you got it. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because they grew up in the Sioux. It was really great. Monica Dotter, who's another member of the band, and Jason O'Brien and Steve McCarthy, they all grew up in the Sioux, and that's what they would listen to, Sly and the Family Stone. They would listen to Parliament. Like, you know, for them, that was the idea behind, you know, kind of making this band. Then they all moved to Toronto, and this was the idea of music that that had brought them together, you know, and where they were. It was such a kind of eye-opener. Wow, this musically is so inspiring to them. And then coming to the big city, and then to, you know, create this kind of music is awesome.
For sure. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm envying your band now.
Well, you got to come out and see us. The Horseshoe.
The Horseshoe. The last show I saw at the Horseshoe, it's been a long time since I've been there, but I saw the second last show of the Rheostatics before they had their...
Oh, another great band.
Yeah,
Canada's got incredible musicians. Yeah. We're fortunate.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So we've reached back a little bit. It says here that that when you went through, it says here you went through York?
Yes, I went to York University for a year there, which was a great, so, you know, because I didn't go through it to an arts high school, and the audition process is quite long, actually for York University. Right. And I remember feeling extremely unprepared. I didn't even know what improvisation was. And that was a massive part of the audition. And, you know, it was so, you know, I was auditioning against all these stars of their high schools, and they knew so much. And luckily I got into that program. And then I wasn't so great with the academic side. I don't know. I was just suddenly free. I was, you know, I had spent, I think they allocated, you had, because I was living on campus because the hours were kind of crazy, and they give you a student card, and you basically, it's almost like, you know, you can charge anything onto the student card, and it was a certain amount of money. And I had gone through what was my year's expense, because there was a pub in the bottom of my building, and I could buy beer with this card that was supposed to feed me. It was just a bit of, so I derailed a bit in university.
So you're saying they don't take attendance is what you're saying?
Yeah, oh my God, it was the only things I would show up for were the theater things, and all the other things, like, I was supposed to take, like, you know, the biology classes, etc. Yeah, I was. So from there, however, I met one of the heads of the acting department there, Ron Singer, had just opened a new school called the Randolph Academy in downtown Toronto, and it was a triple threat school. So for me, you know, I thought, wow, wouldn't that be perfect? Because I had loved, you know, music so much, mm-hmm. and I really loved acting, that this school to me just presented to be this incredible marriage of everything that I wanted to do, except dance. That was something that I had never done before. And when you went to Randolph, you had to do, I think it was about 3 hours of dance a day.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was a crash course for me. And I think this is how terrible a dancer I was. By third year, I would have George Randolph, who was the one who created the school, opened the school. He would sometimes come in and guest teach our class, and I was always in beginner. And by the third year, I think it was probably 2 weeks in, the first years were already way ahead of me, even though this was the third time I had taken this exact class. And he came up to me and said, Joanne, this is not a 10-year program. And I was like, and that was the indication. I was like, all right, so maybe the musical theater career wouldn't necessarily be, you know. I was not a triple threat. Yeah.
But when you say that, and I'm flashing back to the IMDb here,
yes.
Tell me what kind of experience Slings and Arrows was.
Oh, that was...
Because Diane and I on the podcast, and we have constantly referred to that as one of our top Canadian shows of all time. We absolutely love that show.
It was interesting because with that show, I was doing Trading 48 at the same time that I did Slings. And it was because my character on Trading 48 tended to be so serious. It was just such an eye-opening experience to kind of delve into the you know, the comedy of Slings and Arrows, but it was just so truthful. That's what made it funny, and the writing was so good. And thankfully, I had actually hadn't seen season one of Slings when I shot season two, because I think I would have just been so nervous about doing it, because you are amongst all these incredible people. I mean, Susan Coyne, you know, Mark McKinney, Bob Martin, like Paul Gross. You're just, you know, and all the people that the ensemble that they had on that show was just incredible. And it was fun because Jacob Tierney played my boyfriend on it, and we just had such a blast. And Margaret, my character, was just so funny, you know, because she was just such a pothead, and just so, you know, the way she saw the world was just so, so funny. Yeah, that definitely was, you know, I was talking about that series with someone recently. I'm just saying what an incredible show that was. And I'm glad I'd see that it has got a cult following, definitely in the States as well, because it really is such a great show.
I just remember the first time I watched it, because I usually go to Stratford once or twice a year. And
yes.
And it's just, to me, if it could only be that, if Stratford could only be that crazy. I understand that it's probably crazy in the background, but it's not that crazy.
Exactly. No, it was just such a, yeah, fantastic show. I wish it would had gone on longer, but, you know. Sometimes, you know, things end and they, you know, maybe it was their choice that was the time that they felt in those seasons that they had accomplished what they wanted to. So
as you start to, you know, look out and think about the next couple of years, are there roles that you see ahead that you wish you could sink your teeth into? You talked about the fact earlier that you got to play this, you got to play a cop and, you know, play a captain, and that was, you know, a great experience for you. Is there kind of the elusive role out there at this point that you feel like, I want to play this kind of part? I would think that Strange Empire filled in a little bit of that for you, but...
Yeah, absolutely. I always like characters that you're, you know, as an actor, you always want to be challenging yourself. So I think for me, it would definitely just be characters that would sort of be pushing the boundaries or even my comfort zone. So you feel challenged. You know, I definitely, an area that I haven't worked in all that much would be sort of the sci-fi genre. I think that would be really cool. I would love to play, you know, an interesting, cool character, or maybe an alien or something like that. That's something, you know, I would love to do. I was fortunate enough to do Land of the Dead years and years, I think it's 10 years ago now.
Right.
And that was such a, because it was definitely a genre I did not know anything about. Yeah. And then when you kind of get to work with Romero, who is
exactly
one of the greats,
yeah.
Just kind of, you know, but yeah, sci-fi is definitely something that I think that, you know, I would kind of like to sink my teeth. There's so many amazing shows that are shot in Toronto that sort of seems like it definitely could be a possibility for sure.
Well, so, yeah, sci-fi seems, if there's one genre that seems to be pretty consistent, even in, you know, in Canadian productions, it's sci-fi.
Yes.
A lot of the sci-fi we do that we export as well. And so there seems to be that kind of market for it.
Oh, I know. There's such a massive market, which is fantastic, is Lost Girl. That's a show that definitely is known around the world now. Yeah. And it just makes me happy because it's like, you know, I'm really proud of being from Canada. I'm really proud to live here. I don't want to move elsewhere. This is where, yeah, I want to work. These are the productions that I want to be a part of, you know, and to see this industry keep growing, it just makes me really happy.
So growing up in the Toronto area, you probably got some, I always like to talk about the formative years and, you know, the television, the film, the music and the stuff that you locked in on when you were younger and that still stay with you today. For me, it was always like growing up in the 70s. I always used to watch 70s Saturday morning cartoons and would obsess over them when I was growing up. And they still affect me today. I still think some of my happiest moments were growing up on a 70s Saturday morning.
Yes.
I'm wondering what are some of the kind of pop cultural touchstones that you reach back to with regards to television or film or music?
Well, one of the biggest things, my parents immigrated from England, and so certain shows that we grew up, like Coronation Street for me, is just
right.
Like that's that theme there. Like, it just suddenly, just happiness.
And Coronation, you know? Street, you're either there or you're not. Like, I'm not there, I'll be the first to admit, but I have friends. If you try and tell them to not watch Coronation Street, it's like every Sunday, that's what they do. They sit
exactly.
there and watch every episode from the week.
Oh, no, I do. I love it so much. But my husband, again, he's like, as soon as, like, for him, exactly his response to it, as soon as he hears that theme song, it was like shudders through him, you know. And another one that we would always watch, my parents were obsessed with, was Dallas.
Yes.
I love Dallas. I would go skating at Ken Giles Arena, which is in Brampton. And we would skate and then we would go and pick up some snacks and then we would sit in front of the TV and watch Dallas. And for me, that was, you know, oh, J.R. Ewing, like, oh, that was mesmerized by it for me. Like, oh, that definitely kind of from there, it was just, oh, this world, this exciting world of these people in Texas, and you're just
yeah.
I was into that.
It was kind of the end, like that really was almost right near the end of the turnaround of that 3-4 channel universe, where something like Who Shot JR could completely enrapture an entire continent for an entire summer. Like, it was insane. You couldn't turn anywhere.
People were nuts. No, there were shirts, like, everything. It was amazing.
Like, there was, like, 5-page spreads in every newspaper breaking down every character to see who possibly shot JR.
It's so true. I loved it. I was right up there. I was right in there. I was like, yes.
No, go ahead.
But yeah, like those kind of shows for me were kind of, you know. And then I was talking to someone about musical influences the other day. Now there's quite a bit of an age gap between my sisters and I, and my eldest sister was 12 years older, and the middle was 6. You know, so I had varied influences in terms of musically. My dad was really into the Stones and the Beatles, and then my other sister was really into like Culture Club and things like that, and then my eldest sister was into like Christian rock. So we would really have a whole bunch of varied things that were in the basement. But you know, definitely music to me was that was an escape for sure, and definitely you know, it forms you. It forms what you know, your taste and your desire and the things that you go after. So it's really important.
And remembering what album covers used to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was trying to explain to my eldest about cassettes the other day. We were at some flea market and there was cassettes. I know, I was like, oh, isn't that great? Fabulous mixtape. There's such an art of making a fantastic mixtape. And you think now how difficult that was to do. And trying to explain this to my son, he just has this blank look on his face. And I was trying to, you know, he just didn't quite get it.
The only way you can explain it to kids now is to get them to watch Guardians of the Galaxy, because that's all it was all about the mixtape last summer.
Yes, exactly.
people finally learned. People who are under the age of 20, I think, finally learned what a mixtape was last summer when they watched Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's not
a
bad thing.
Awesome. Exactly.
So we've got Swept Under coming up. We've got an unnamed project that we can't talk about now because we're under fear of pain of death.
Oh yes, 30-page contract. You know, confidentiality agreements. Yes,
non-disclosure agreements.
Exactly.
Is there other than the impending gig coming up at the Horseshoe? Is there anything else coming up that we should be looking towards?
Yes, I'm trying to. We're trying to get this done. A director friend of mine, a fabulous filmmaker named Annie Bradley. We've been trying to. We've been putting together a film that was interesting. It's about a female cop, but it's a thriller, and that's next on the slate. That's next up for me. So getting that done, and you know. It's exciting. You get to a point in your career where you really do want to be doing work with the people that you love and that you respect. And when all those things kind of come together, it's you can't be happier than that, you know.
Now, do you enter that in terms of also a bit of a producer role as well, or are you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go on to that as in a producer role, which will be interesting. Definitely. I'm not one of these, you know, I think a lot of people in this profession as actors tend to have, you know, they'd really like to direct or write or et cetera. I'm purely happy being an actor. That's enough for me. I have respect for what everyone does. But really, I think that, you know, but yeah, so this will be interesting to kind of see that side of things.
And going right from the beginning, hopefully you get, we just talked a couple of minutes ago about the idea of finding true characters that you want to be able to play. Being involved from the production process would probably enable you to have a little bit more creative control over that as well.
Exactly. You know, because that's the thing sometimes when you're kind of, you know, when you're a part of anything creative, there's just, you're really trying to not let the business side of things kind of creep in, you know, which is really hard because it's a business. At the end of the day, it is a business. And it just sometimes it can be really, you know, tricky how things kind of work out. And, you know, so it will be nice to kind of remember again, you know, the roots of creating something.
Well, thanks to Joanne Bolin for jumping on the Skype and talking to me about Canadian television, Strange Empire, all of the great television work she's done, some of the film work she's done, and especially, I so dig talking about music with people who get up on stage and perform, and I got to talk about Parliament Funkadelic, and I got to talk about Tom Waits, and I had such a cool time. Thanks to her for coming on the TV ABC's podcast this week. You can listen to us here every week at tv-eh.com. Subscribe to the feed. And if you'd like, if you'd really, really like to, you can help us keep the servers going, keep the air conditioning on in the summer by going to our Patreon page, patreon.com/TV_EH, and contribute as little as $1 a week to help us keep this stuff going. You know, if you like it, you know, it's worth $1 to you to have, you know, maybe an hour a week that you can subscribe to talk about Canadian television, and you enjoy listening to the other hour that we do every other week with Greg David and Diane Wilde, please, please consider going there. You can find us on Twitter at TV_EH. You can find all the other podcasts that I do at anthonymarco.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. Please, please, please leave a comment or hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you think or people that you'd like us to talk to. That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.